Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Keep it rolling here on the early line, hour number two on a Wednesday morning. Kevin Walsh, Donnie Wrightside, the Sports Grid Network. We stick with some NFL conversations here because, well, Sean McVay might retire. I can't even, like, we hit this a little bit on Monday, Donnie, and we're like, this can't be real. And then they asked McVay again, and he's completely non-committal. It's seemingly to returning to the Los Angeles Rams this offseason. Wants to start a family, get married, and focus, I guess, on that. And also probably get paid more money to work less and call games in the booth. Your reaction to the notion that Sean McVay, the youngest head coach in the NFL, just right now, not Super Bowl, like he's the youngest coach currently in the league, might retire after five seasons.
I'm amazed that it's coming out, but is this, Kevin, the new day and age of the NFL coach where, hey, I make so much money because, as you see, they're reported he's making about $8.5 million a year, which I assume he's probably been making that $8.5 million for at least three out of those 5 years with one of those extensions, where it's like, hey, I can step back here. ESPN will hire me in a second to take the Monday Night Football spot, and I'll get even more money to work less. But I understand that. You know, human element says, man, why, where do I sign up? How do I do that? Because you're not going to ESPN here, Kevin, for 1 year, $10 million. It's probably like 4 years and $40 million that will be guaranteed regardless if you work or they don't want you after 2 years, similar like being a coach. But I have to say this. You're 36 years old. You've been to one Super Bowl and lost. You've been to another one and won. Your record is 55-26, which is close to 68%. You're 7-3 in the playoffs with a Super Bowl ring. You can run yourself right into historical numbers over the next 10 years by getting back to another Super Bowl, winning it. You know, he's got two rings now as a head coach. You can ride off into the sunset at 45 years old as maybe one of the best coaches of all time. Now, also, I preface this by saying, yes, you know, he's got a wife and he's going to get married this summer, as he said, wants to start a family. That all makes a lot of sense here. But you're talking about guys that get into coaching. You don't get into coaching, Kevin, as a profession and say, boy, I hate coaching, but I can maybe make some money if I'm good at it. You get into the coaching profession because you want to make it to the pinnacle of sports, which would be an NFL head coach. And once you get there with a great organization and a good football team and you're stacking rings together, making a lot of money, this is what you live for. And I know you brought it up last night on In Play Sports Tonight. The guys like Bill Belichick, Andy Reid, the lifers. Coaches are usually lifers. Once they get to that pinnacle there and they have success, this is all they know. Oh, you know, you don't think Sean McVay wants to golf on a Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday? It would be fantastic for 2 weeks into an offseason. But then you start to get that grind back and say, man, I got to get in the coaching room. I got to check out tape. I got to see what my roster is going to look like. I would be shocked if he retires anytime, Kevin, over the next 10 years. Since, again, he's not 46. He's not 56. He's 36 years old.
You work your whole life to be a high-level coach. He's able to accomplish that sooner than most ever could imagine, have success at a level that only, you know, few ever really are able to reach. He's won a Super Bowl, been to two already, and has made the postseason in all of so every year but one so far in Los Angeles. And the reality of Sean McVay's situation, Donnie, though, is, look, he's not the first head coach that's looking to get married or start a family. There is one piece of this puzzle that is, I think, making Sean McVay's situation unique. Currently getting paid, the reports say, $8.5 million as the Rams head coach. Great money. There might be more money out there. The radio audience enters the fold. Appreciate everybody tuning in to the early line on Sports Grid Radio. That is Donnie Wrightside. I am Kevin Walsh as we are live on a Wednesday morning. Donnie, the reported salary for McVay, $8.5 million. The reported salary for Tony Romo calling games, $17 million. The chance, Donnie, for Sean McVay to work less and double the salary and be home more often, that seems to really be what is giving him the notion that maybe he can step away because there's more money out there. He checked the Super Bowl box, and well, then why not, Donnie? I mean, like, is that really what we're looking at here?
It might be, but now also, let's play devil's advocate on that same thing. And I doubt Sean McVay's playing this up saying, hey, I'm a little bit underpaid at $8.5 million, and I'm thinking of walking away. But let's go to Stan Kroenke, the owner, who goes to California, and the state tells him, we're not giving you any money for the stadium. He goes, no problem. You need a couple billion dollars to build this stadium. I got it covered here, which is amazing in that. So you're telling me right now you have the best young head football coach in the game at 36. And there's no salary cap, Kevin. There's a salary cap on the NFL per players, but nothing on the coaching staff. What do you say right now that he's saying? You don't think Stan Kroenke and that ownership group and that front office is going to hold on now? Is this about money? We can make this happen. You're getting $8.5 million. How about we double it here? How about we go, you know, $17 million per year over the next 5 years just to keep you comfortable? That's certainly a valid opinion. There's no way, shape, or form that Kroenke, the owner, is going, I pay you $8.5 million. You honor this contract, even if you can make $18 million in a booth next year. That can't be happening, can it?
I can't imagine so, but, you know, in a way, same, even if the money's the same, Donnie,
yeah,
it is less work, right, being in that booth, and we've wondered, could that, you know, be the future possibly for some of these guys? The last thing I'll say on this, the Rams are 12-1 to win the Super Bowl. Unless Sean McVay would be replaced by Sean Payton, they are not going to be 12-1 to move to win the Super Bowl there. Raheem Morris looks like he could be great. Who is left from that offensive coaching staff to take over the play calling? And Aaron Donald might retire? What happened in Los Angeles? Be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Time for some NBA preview here on a Wednesday. We begin with the Lakers. The Lakers will be home tonight against the Utah Jazz. They have not played since Saturday, where they were a big-time dog against the Golden State Warriors and almost won that game. LeBron missed a free throw down the back stretch there, and ultimately a win for the Warriors, but a cover for the Lakers. Tonight, the Lakers are a 5-point home underdog against the Utah Jazz, who since the return of Donovan Mitchell have won 5 in a row and covered 5 in a row. Total for this one, DRS, 227. What jumps out?
What jumps out is, Kevin, I'm going to ask you a question on this as well, is this one of those games that might send the Lakers off the rails? Now, again, they're underdogs in this game by 5 points. You're playing a good Jazz basketball team, but it just feels to me like we're now post-trade deadline. There's no more, you know, conjecture on the Lakers. Like, hey, somebody's going to come in and rescue us. You have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. That should be enough to rescue the team. But it just seems like they're treading water right now. And if they would have beaten the Golden State Warriors, that would have been a nice win and maybe sent them off on a good trajectory here for the second half of the second half of the season. But I got to tell you tonight, you see the 227 total around that range here, and then you see the Lakers getting 4.5 points. What happens if the Lakers lose tonight? I don't know, 110 to 98. What is this press conference going to look at? Because when we take a look at the standings here, and not just in particular this game alone, you look at the Western Conference, the Lakers are ninth in a playoff. Now, will they probably reach the Pelicans, the Spurs, or the Kings? Probably not. But you can't tell me heading into the season, and I'm saying to myself, at the end of the year or by game 65, Anthony Davis and LeBron James are both healthy, and we're fighting for our life in the ninth or 10th seed here in the playoff round. This could be interesting to watch, but sooner or later, the mettle of a team shows up. And if you're going to tell me LeBron is healthy and playing well, and AD is healthy and playing well, it almost shouldn't matter, Kevin, who is around you or surrounding your teammates to say, hey, I need a little bit more help. Get a couple guys to hit a few jump shots and you should be fine. I got a lot more focused on this game for the rest of the season, Kevin, than just this game itself. Because if the Lakers lose, I don't know, 110-109, okay, they're right around the corner. Utah's a good team. But if this is one of those where it's like a wire-to-wire win by Utah, this is going to signal doom for me.
It's here's the interesting thing. So you take a look at their last six results. They come back home after a long East Coast trip, beat Portland, as they should. That narrow loss to the Clippers where 80 should have had the winner, Reggie Jackson had the winner, and then 80 almost took it right back there. You lose by one. That would have been great for a little bit of momentum. The huge comeback victory against the Knicks, LeBron's first game back in a while, and you feel like you're riding high. Milwaukee does what Milwaukee does, piping hot, put a buck 31 on you. You live with that. You go to Portland. Second leg of a back-to-back, Westbrook's first absence of the season, day before the deadline, and you have maybe your worst loss of the season where you lose to a depleted Portland Trail Blazers team. Deadline passes, and the Lakers put up a performance, Donnie, that was this close to saying, everything's fine. We're past the deadline. This is our roster. We still maybe have the best player in the NBA in LeBron, one of the best big men in the NBA in Anthony Davis. And if we can just get not disastrous play from Russ, we'll be fine. They lose that game by two. It was a step in the right direction. But to your point, it feels like it could all be undone here against Utah. If they get undressed in this game by 20-plus on their home floor, that's a long trade deadline. Now, they come out of the deadline. Lakers play the Clippers, the Pelicans, the Mavericks, and the Clippers again. An opportunity to be 3-1, if not better, and get some momentum back to start the break. But on the other side of the coin, Donnie, as we're rightly talking disaster, if the Lakers win this game against Utah, and the two results after the break are almost beating Golden State and then beating the Utah Jazz, I'm telling you right now, I'll be here tomorrow to let you know everything's fine on the Lakers, and they're right back to being a legitimate contender in the Western Conference, that this group is fine. But I just don't know if I can trust it. That's kind of the tough part.
Yeah, no, and I was just going to jump in there and say, like, because I think we talked about even before the trade deadline, if you were to say that the Lakers would lose a basketball game, but LeBron is healthy and playing well and AD is healthy and playing well, that's really all you can ask for. Because I think the momentum for the Lakers here, Kevin, for me, is not so much where they end up seeding-wise, but I think if you're a Lakers fan or front office, you say to yourself, if I make the playoffs and LeBron and AD are both healthy, that's all I care about for the remaining part of the season.
Yeah, and look, for the Lakers, though, who I think I would actually take plus the 4.5. At some point, it's like, oh, we got an easy game. We should win tonight. You have to be able to beat good teams, right? At some point down, you know, you look in the second half, there's games against Golden State and Phoenix and Utah and Denver. We got to win. You got to go and win some of those games there if you're the Los Angeles Lakers. We'll see if they're ultimately able to do that. The other primetime game tonight, Donnie, is a battle of New York with the Nets and the Knicks. The Knicks are hosting in this game. But that means still no Kyrie Irving. I imagine these teams met in a series somehow. They won't. Maybe the play-in. And, like, Kyrie just can't play. It's incredible to me. I think the one thing that jumps off for me is the Seth Curry number at 16.5. I still expect him to be the show when there's no Kyrie, no Durant, and no Ben Simmons. I think that would be a look to the over. Any thoughts on one depleted team and then the other most horrifying group in the NBA and the New York Knicks?
Yeah, I think I want to take the most horrifying group in the NBA in this, because how can you not? Like, you're talking about the battle for New York in this game. Now, is this going to be go a long way to who's going to win the championship, the winner of this game? No, it's not. But if I'm looking here from a Brooklyn perspective, I'm looking just to tread water right now, which you got the win. You broke up that 11-game losing streak the other night. But again, I look at the starting lineup, Patty Mills, Seth Curry, Bruce Brown, Kessler Edwards, and Andre Drummond. And if I'm the Knicks, number one, I'm sitting here at the FanDuel Sports. We're only favored by 4.5 points against that lineup at home. That should tell you something right now. But if you end this game, similar to the way we took the look at the Lakers, there are ways to lose games. But if I'm going to be the Knicks in this one and I get another, you know, 28-14-10 from Julius Randle, and I'm in a dogfight late because Seth Curry and Patty Mills are controlling this ball game, I'm in trouble for the Knicks. This seems like a season that's already lost for the New York Knicks. But I got to tell you, if they're home in the Garden tonight and And if the Brooklyn Nets came in with Harden, KD, and Kyrie and blew the Knicks off the court, you'd say to yourself, well, what did you want us to do at this point? We're not a good basketball team. But you can't tell me the talent level should be way higher here on the Knicks tonight than it is for the Nets. But if the Nets are battling them late into the fourth quarter, that's a terrible sign for the Knicks. I got to tell you, even though I don't like the Knicks and Thibodeau and what he's doing this year, if the Knicks don't win this game by 5+ points, something really has to change immediately for the Knicks moving forward.
Look, I think everything you said there is fair, while also looking their last, I mean, they played Portland at 4.5-point favorite. They lose outright. They're at home against OKC, 10-point favorite. Brutal. They lose in overtime. I don't care. I don't trust them. Like a while back, like, we would find Knicks props, Donnie, that would make sense. And it got to a point where I'm like, look, I'm tapped out. I hope you win. I'm good. Good luck with the Randle double-double. I hope you have a nice night. I can't do this anymore. I can't sit there a rebound shy and, you know, with the whole fourth quarter to play and the starters never come back in because Quentin Grimes is hot. Can't do it, won't do it. Look, I've been tired of this Knicks team for a long time now, Donnie. If they're playing, I'm fading. That's just the way the Knicks line up for me. Brooklyn's at least covered three consecutive games, so we'll see what makes sense in that respect there. Let me quickly just bring up, and then we'll do Nuggets Warriors on the other side, Donnie. Phoenix, 15.5, now 16 against Houston. Last night, you were right. Too many points against the Clips. Second leg of a back-to-back. You're laying 16 with the Suns?
No, I'm not laying 16 with the Suns. Capability of winning by 16? Absolutely. But if it's a back-to-back night here, you have some veteran guys like Chris Paul, maybe not able to close the door with a 17-14. They'll win this basketball game, but I'm under the impression, again, might be taking the points here with the Suns, where all they care about is winning basketball games, not covering 16 points or so.
And look, this team is 500 against the number at home. Think about that. Think about how many times, like, they're 25 and 5 straight up, 15-15 against the number in their home games this year. They are the player performance double. CP3 double-double, maybe a Devin Booker 30-point performance. All of that stuff makes a little bit more sense. We'll talk Steph versus Jokic and college basketball next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on Sports Grid, a break. With LeBron positivity from everybody behind the scenes. I was just listening in. Everyone's just big LeBron fans. People excited about the king on the court tonight against the Utah Jazz. Who could blame? A couple of subpar stars will be in action, though. Jokic and Steph Curry. Good players. Not as good as LeBron. Good players. Not as good as LeBron. But Golden State, Donnie, a 5-point favorite. Total 224. Golden State's limping into the break. They've only won one of their last four games. They haven't covered in six in a row. Denver playing some better ball here. What do you think when you see Golden State in Denver?
Yeah, hopefully maybe some defense shows up once again for Golden State to sort of save the day for them. But the one thing that is a little bit encouraging here, I think you could take a look from a Steph Curry perspective, 33 points in his last game. Steph Curry, like 8 of 13 from three-point range. Now, the only factor in that was that now you're seeing increased minutes for Klay Thompson now coming back off the injury. He was not his normal Splash Brother self in the last game. So they're a home team minus 5.5. I think they're legitimate play in this game. Like, I love Nikola Jokic. There's nobody that can really check Nikola Jokic. Maybe if you have Draymond Green back, they can sort of, you know, slow him down a little bit. So what do you expect out of Jokic? Possibly a triple-double. But I'm looking for the Golden State Warriors to bounce back here at home tonight, try to keep pace with the Phoenix Suns. I'll lay the 5 in this game with the Golden State Warriors. Think they can win this game by margin and get that winning cover.
I don't mind that. I think you look towards Steph. I think he's starting to find a little bit more of the rhythm. Right now, his last three games, 35, 24, 33. He has a points prop listed at 24.5. I think Steph should be able to come out there and give you another good one here. I like backing Steph props at home. You look at his splits on the season, it's over 26 a game at home on the year. It's just at like 25 on the road this year. Marginal difference makes the difference, though, when you're betting props. We make the transition to college basketball. Really, really fun action in college last night. Nova eking out that cover against Providence there. Tennessee, what a monster result we saw. The upset from Penn State over Michigan State. Texas took down OU in overtime. And this college card, Donnie, should deliver some good action. But I want to start, usually we try and take, you know, oh, all right, two ranked teams are playing, or, you know, these spreads are tight. I want to take the two top teams in the country. Both Gonzaga and Auburn are in play, and people like to be able to wager on the best teams in all of college basketball. We'll begin with the number one team, Gonzaga, laying 29.5 against Pepperdine. This total over 160. Can Pepperdine, Donnie, hang with the number one team in the country?
No, they can't. And we're headed for a 30-point blowout here. And sometimes in these instances, you're taking a look at yourself and seeing the FanDuel Sportsbook their list there as Gonzaga minus 29.5, a 162.5, which is crazy that it's that high in that 30-point, you know, margin. But the reason being is both of these teams do like tempo, but also it's the same thing that we talk about every time. And you're going to get this with Gonzaga a lot in their conference. And that is they're number one on offense. They're number one on defense. They're basically a high major team that should be playing in the ACC, the Big Ten, or the SEC, and they're playing in the WCC. Now, there are some pretty good basketball teams there. Pepperdine, certainly not one of them. So if we're looking at this game, Gonzaga, 21-2 overall, 10-0 in conference play, 14 straight victories. Pepperdine, 7-20, including a 1-11 in West Coast conference play, and lost 11 of 12. The thing that makes these so interesting, because you say to yourself, typically, you see a 29-point line, oh, you know, they'll blow them out and go to their bench. Here's the only issue. Gonzaga's bench is going to call in and extend the lead from whatever the starters have. So if we're looking at a team, again, with Gonzaga, number one in inefficiency in their conference, which is outrageous, their numbers that they have, number one in effective field goal percentage, number one in three-point shooting. Like, this team shoots 43% as a team from behind the arc, 62% inside the arc, 74% from the free throw line. And then you take a look at the defense, which is number one overall. But the one saving grace you have is, you know, Gonzaga plays defense, whether it's above the arc or inside the arc. And they're not going to foul because they're not usually fouling at the end of game situations or putting themselves in any, you know, bad spots per se. But this is one of those where I would be surprised, Kevin, if this game is in a 10-point lead after 8 minutes, a 15-point lead by midway through the first half, and close to actually covering this number by halftime. And we've seen it before, Kevin. Gonzaga is bored in the first half. Pepperdine's within 8 points, mm-hmm. and they just run them off the track over the first 10 minutes in the second half. I'm not afraid of the 29.5. I think Gonzaga can blast this basketball team and win easily into the 30s tonight.
So just for a reference here on Gonzaga, right? Lay big numbers all the time. In WCC play, there is only one team that has covered so far against Gonzaga. It was Portland catching 32.5, who did a bang-up job because they lost by 32. I mean, that is incredible. Now, I will say this. Gonzaga numbers are sharp, as you could imagine. They've pushed twice so far in conference play, and we talk about, right again, the one non-cover there being by the hook. But you shouldn't really, I think, Donnie, be able to lay numbers like this with Gonzaga in conference and always walk away unscathed. But it's a credit to this Bulldogs team, who I will struggle with all year long trying to figure out, you know, how to price them in the futures market. They were vulnerable when they were playing, you know, the better teams in college basketball early season. They're getting better, but it is against the WCC. I know the WCC isn't awful, but it's still not the SEC, the Big Ten, the ACC. It's just not. But at the end of the day, the Zags have been a team, Donnie, that you can just get to the window on consistently and make money.
No, you certainly can. And also, you know, we take a look at team totals in this. Now, you look at this, it's a 30-point game. And I just told you, like, both of these teams do play with tempo. Pepperdine's defense in a 10-team conference is ninth overall. Mm-hmm. So that tells you the sort of destruction that Gonzaga can have. But look at this total. Like, sometimes, like last night, like, I lost on a 73.5, 74.5 team total. And I was like, ooh, came within a bucket here on Northern Iowa. This one is 96.5. So essentially, in order to get your team total, you need 100 points. And the key part about this is you say, okay, these two teams are really fast and Pepperdine can fill up the basket and they can chase down Gonzaga. How many times do we talk about, Kevin, you know, that running mate here? you're not going to get a running mate, and I'm not so sure it even matters. I would be surprised if Gonzaga finishes up in the 80s in this game, which, again, is still an incredibly high team total and finishes double-digit length away from actually cashing in the team total. They should approach 100 points, but it's just one of those things where, do I think they can? Yes. But 96.5, you need 97 points to cash a team total. I don't know if I can just theoretically go that high.
Look, it was at home. It's one, you know, but the first game they played Pepperdine, they put up a buck 17. They scored 63 points in the first half, Donnie. I'm like, the first half team total, just trying to do the math on it, is like 47.5.
Yeah.
What?
You need a 50 spot.
You got
to, yeah.
A 50 spot. And they're probably going to get there, by the way. Like, they'll probably get
34
there,
points for like 10 minutes into the game. Like, they're on their way.
Yes.
That type of game. That's probably what you're anticipating tonight. Sure.
They're like 6 of 7 from three, 80% from the field. And it's just like, thanks for showing up. The number two team in the country, the Auburn Tigers, Donnie, against Vanderbilt. Another mismatch here. Though, not laying 30. At home, laying 13.5. Total checking in. Right now, 141.5. What about Auburn's chances to cover a number tonight?
Yeah, it should be a good chance here to cover that 13.5. But, you know, you start talking about Auburn, number two overall in defensive efficiency in the SEC, number two overall on offensive efficiency. So they're a really good basketball team. They should win this game. But sometimes you do have a little bit of a stat, Kevin, that could actually make some sense and save Vanderbilt. And the reason being is, you know who's number one in SEC conference play behind the arc in percentage? You got it, man. That is Vanderbilt. 38% from three-point range. Now, reason why that makes a difference here, there's 14 teams in SEC play. You know who likes to shoot a lot of three-point shots? Vanderbilt does. 47% of their total shots come from behind the arc. And 10th in the conference at chasing you off of the three-point line, that is Auburn. Now, is Auburn a much better team than Vanderbilt? Yes, it is. But the ultimate equalizer in conference play is the three-point line. So if I'm looking at Vandy, they're number one overall at making three-point shots. Now, how about on defense for Vanderbilt? Number one overall in SEC play at defending the three-point line. So something to keep in the ingredients there. When I'm looking for a dog, give me a team that wants to shoot three-point shots, a defense that will let me shoot three-point shots, but also, more importantly, I'll defend the three. Because if Auburn just goes up and down the court fast-breaking and dunking on Vanderbilt, obviously I'm not going to have a chance to cover the line. But if I get a regular performance out of Vanderbilt from behind the three-point line, they should be able to cover this number.
I will say that they have been able to cover four in a row. They've had four team totals over, five consecutive overs. But Auburn this season, again, we talk about the ability to bet the best teams and make money. 12-1 against the spread at home this year. I mean, that is just that is an unbelievable cover rate. But the matchups can change the math at the end of the day, and perhaps Vanderbilt can keep this close. Maybe this game is high scoring, which is always fun to watch an Auburn team fly up and down this court. I don't really want us to get cut off because Baylor, Texas Tech is a good one to talk about here. Let me ask you this, Don, without breaking into it. Have you circled any plays this morning?
Have not circled any, but I got to tell you, the Baylor-Texas Tech game is pretty interesting from a three-point combo and a two-point combo that will hit after the break and break that one down.
Yeah, it's a game right now where Texas Tech has climbed to 11 in the country, and Baylor has been playing some odd ball down to 7, which is still impressive. And they had that huge win over Texas, but the way Kansas blasted them, that Bama loss, I know, took a little shine off the coin there. Close game against West Virginia. Texas Tech favored in the basketball game. The Big 12 has been an interesting league to cap all season long, where Baylor looked by far and away the best group. We thought Texas would have a big year. Maybe not. Maybe so. Big win against Oklahoma. Where, you know, does Baylor fall? Where does Texas Tech fall there? It's a fun league to break down. We'll close out this matchup with two top 11 teams and then talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback situation. Could Deshaun Watson be their man? We discuss next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
close out some CBB talk here. I got to say, though, DRS, quickly. You know, we have our flows in rhythms. We're getting counted back in the break. I don't know who it is, but it's not Brian. I mean, this guy's been off for at least an hour now, man. You're right back there eating a bag of egg and cheese. This guy's just checked out.
I think the voice was given at him, too, because every once in a while you get the 5, 4. Hey, maybe need a little bit of breather. Too much work.
Yeah, there was one more. That someone was trying to cough up a lung, giving us that 4, 5.
Wait, are we sure he's not driving around in his car producing this thing at this point now?
I guess we should be just grateful that old B-Ruts decided to show up to the dance. Let's do Texas Tech Baylor, though, here, Donnie. As the Red Raiders and the Bears are looking to do the dance here, -36.5 for a total. Not a pick 'em spread, but the money lines are certainly accessible if you wanted the Texas Tech side of the coin here. What jumps out?
Yeah, it's actually a pretty good matchup here, because you take a look at Baylor, very good basketball team. Texas Tech, as we know, very good basketball team here. Both of these teams line up 9-3 in conference play, 8-4, you know, winners of 3 or 4, winners of 4 or 5. So they're coming in relatively on good stretches here. But if we take a look at what makes the most sense here, Baylor's offense, #2 overall in efficiency in conference play in the Big 12. It was #1, Texas Tech. So, I mean, you have a really good, you know, option here. But let's take a look at what makes sense here. 3-point shooting. Baylor, #1 in conference play in the Big 12, 35%. If you take a look at Texas Tech, out of 10 teams, they're 7th at defending it. Now, here's what makes a lot of sense. So, if you got 35%, you want to shoot those. Top 5 in conference at shooting volume from 3-point range is Baylor. So it's a nice matchup there. 35%, we make it more than anybody else, and we'll shoot it decent enough. But also, looking at 10 teams, Kevin, in conference play, you know who doesn't chase you off the line here? You got it. Texas Tech, 10th overall out of 10 teams at letting you shoot the 3. Now you say to yourself, okay, you know me, like college basketball, professional basketball, if you have an edge at the 3-point line, it always is going to keep you in this ballgame. We saw the FanDuel Sportsbook there listed at a 2-point dog price here for Baylor. But let's take a look at Texas Tech, almost the opposite here in a matchup with Baylor. Texas Tech's offense in conference play, #4 overall in efficiency. And Baylor's defense is #2. Now, we take a look, and I just told you who's the best 3-point shooting team in conference play is Baylor. You know the worst shooting team is? Texas Tech, 27%. Mm. So 10 out of 10. Now, also, they're 9th in conference play, Kevin, at shooting volume from 3-point range. So it's one of those Virginia effects. Yeah, we stink at shooting the 3. We don't even care about it. We don't shoot as many. But let's take a look here at 2 points here, meaning inside the arc. Fast breaks, short elbow jumpers, layups at the rim. #3 in conference at 53% is Texas Tech inside the arc. Now, if you take a look at defending inside the arc, Baylor, 8th in conference play. But also, here's where the matchup makes a lot of sense if you're looking to bet from a Texas Tech, you know, side per se. #2 in conference, point distribution is inside the arc here for Texas Tech. Do you know who gives up the 2nd most amount of points inside the arc in conference play? That's Baylor's defense. So you got a perfect matchup. One team wants to shoot 3s, the other will let them. One team wants to score inside of the 3-point line, the other team will let you score here. Perfect matchup here. Maybe leaning towards the 3-point shots, Baylor at +2 for me here, even though it's tough to win on the road there at Texas Tech.
It's really fascinating just looking at what these teams have done, not only recently, but just throughout the season, right? But Texas Tech, they've not lost at home yet this year. You mentioned it right there. It's hard to win on the road. Baylor's only game as a dog the entire season was when they were blown out by Kansas. But they've played 2 games since then. They laid 6.5 against Kansas State and won by 15, and then laid 5.5 against Texas and won by 17. A team as good as Baylor, sometime they get that wake-up call. And this is one of those games, Donnie, that I think obviously people are going to look to bet it in-game, and I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, we'll follow this on In-Play Sports tonight. We'll have a good chunk of the first half on our show, you know, following this game here. I think the Baylor Bears or the Texas Tech, depending on the ebbs and flows, will jump off of the page there. Should be a fun matchup in the Big 12. An opportunity, though, for the time we have left in this show to get to a topic that we've been waiting on. It's funny, we come back off of the L.A. trip, Super Bowl, we had a breakdown in its entirety there, but there were so many headlines developed over the weekend that we've only had the chance to begin to unpack some of them. But maybe the biggest, Donnie, involves this Tampa Bay Buccaneers team, as there are a lot of options on the table for this group at the quarterback position, or maybe there aren't a lot of options, but they're hoping for some major things to come to fruition. They think that there's a chance Brady comes back. They're doing homework on Deshaun Watson. Those are monster, monster headlines. Let's unpack the Brady thing first, Donnie. Because on the day he retired, right, that official retirement, we did the hot or not, was he the GOAT? And the second was, will he come back? And I think we both kind of joked about it, but also said it wouldn't shock us here. Donnie, do you think there's really a chance that Tom Brady is back under center for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
I do actually think there's a chance, because you're not talking about, Kevin, where so many players, when they end the season, like, you're beat up, you're battered, you say to yourself, man, I just want to get away from the game for some time. Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine myself, you know, doing the work like weightlifting and running sprints. I just want to step away. I'm ready to retire. But this is the normal thought process between, you know, most NFL guys that have been in the league for a decade or two decades, like Tom Brady. But then you get that itch. It turns in from February, which is now post-Super Bowl, to March, to April, where you're used to usually getting back in. And, hey, you know, me and Giselle went to Costa Rica. We went to Brazil. We went to Europe. We had a great time. And, boy, I played 36 rounds of golf, you know, over a month's period. And then you say to yourself, I'm a football player. I've done this my whole life. I'm getting the itch. I really want to come back, which is interesting, because you can't take that. You can't tell Tampa Bay, Kevin, I'm retired, and then have them, you know, circle the wagons and maybe put a draft in place to get a young quarterback or make a trade for a veteran. And then you say in late May, hey, guys, I really think I want to come back. I would be surprised if he does come back. But this is the normal thought process, where it's very emotional when the season ends. And then when you have time to think about it and go, man, I can still give it a go. I'm not surprised. There might be second thoughts, but I would be surprised, Kevin, if he actually does come back.
I would be surprised as well, because I think it's a big thing for Brady to say he's going to hang it up. And it's odd, though, because if Tampa moves on, and we'll talk about that in a second here, it's not like Brady would be limited for options, though. Because remember we talked, you know, we were like, well, you know, Rivers basically was like, yeah, I'll come back if a contender needs a quarterback. We go, what are the chances of that? Mm-hmm. And then the Saints were blowing up his phone. It just somehow finds a way, Donnie, where there's a team in the thick of it that could use help at the quarterback position. It just always tends to work out that way. Does Tom Brady need a perfect situation, or is the itch going to be that strong? We don't know, but Brady's wording. Now, look, Brady can be an odd cat in that way, but his wording did stand out a little bit, where he didn't say, I'm retiring. He's like, I'm no longer making the commitment to competing at the highest level. And I don't know if that was a mistake there, ultimately, DRS. I wouldn't rule him being out back out there on the field. I just wouldn't, because, again, he is going, like, if he's battling it, Donnie, it's not going to be made easier when his phone is being blown up by different organizations in season saying, hey, 12, you want to come back and play some football?
You're right about that. Now, let's take a second-hand look at this. Let's just say Jimmy Garoppolo gets cut from San Francisco. The Buccaneers figure Tom Brady's retired. They just, you know, piecemeal, and Garoppolo goes down to Tampa Bay. Is there any chance in this world where it's like late May? Because the only time we've really saw this before, if you remember, the Green Bay Packers, when they were like, we're going to move on to Aaron Rodgers, and Brett Favre goes, yeah, you know what? I'm coming back this year, and I'm ready to play. Before he could step off that plane, he was a New York Jet. Not saying that, you know, he would put his retirement papers in and have to come back, but is there a world where Tom Brady steps into the 49ers? Tom Brady steps into the Indianapolis Colts, where he would play elsewhere this year after saying, hey, I retired. I left the Bucs no choice here. They moved on a quarterback. Now I'm going to play somewhere else. I can't see that as a possibility, Kevin. Do you see that at any possibility?
No, I don't. But again, it's just the calls are going to be there. They are, right? Like, and you never know who, like.
The Broncos.
I think the. Yeah. Right. Like, I just. Again, like, we're middle of the season. I'm walking right into this one. A quarterback is injured. Enough with this. And then, listen, they make that phone call, man. I just think he might have a hard time turning them down. One of the fascinating things, though, that you're alluding to there is how long does Tampa Bay hold out, right? Because at some point you're going to have to, you know, make your decision on the next quarterback that you want there. And the reports are that they're going to explore the Russell Wilson market, but they're also doing extensive homework on Deshaun Watson. Watson is going to become one of the most interesting guys, I think, during the offseason, Donnie, because we recently heard from Lovie Smith, and I appreciate it. He goes, I'm not dancing around it, man. You know, like, look, I coached the Texans. I know what the story is here around Deshaun Watson. We want a resolution sooner than later. A lot of stuff that is going on with this guy that doesn't pertain to football. Once things are hammered out, we want to, you know, make a decision here. Are you here or are you not? My expectation, Donnie, is that Deshaun Watson is playing quarterback for some team next year. Could it be Tampa Bay?
It's intriguing. Boy, is it really intriguing, because if you're getting what we last saw from Deshaun Watson on the football field and plugging him into a really good organization with talent around him, the sky would be the limit here. And it's another interesting point, too, that you bring up from the Houston Texans' perspective. Yeah, they want closure, but doesn't it seem like we should have already had it by now? Like, the season is over. Are depositions starting? Are we settling anything? Because there's no way, shape, or form that Deshaun Watson is showing up to the Houston Texans training facility and being a backup safety again like he was last year. But if you're talking from a Tampa Bay perspective, if Tom Brady retires and Deshaun Watson steps in, are they not the favorites again to get back to the championship, even though that we just saw the Rams win the Super Bowl? If I'm getting Deshaun Watson of that, I know the way he was capable of playing with the Texans, and you put him on a Bruce Arians staff with Byron Leftwich as the offensive coordinator, and all that talent around them, they're a Super Bowl contender right off the bat.
That, I think, was the next question there, because how much can Watson impact any team's odds? But Tampa Bay, like the Rams right now, plus 450, Green Bay, Dallas, 6-1. Sandwich it right in between, same number as the Los Angeles Rams, a plus 450 maybe. I have the expectation that Watson is going to play. I don't know anything. It's just trying to read, you know, what's going on here. It's seemingly, Donnie, things are going to be settled. And at some point, probably, you know, a team is going to take a chance on that talent to come in and be their quarterback. That's just how it's going to play out there. For the Bucs, you know, oh, we're going to explore the Russell Wilson thing. I don't know what assets that necessarily lines up at, but that's another guy there that is going to put them right at the top of the NFC. It does jump off the page, Donnie, like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are not looking to take a massive step back, a reset year. Kyle Trask, as you've mentioned, maybe even Carson Wentz. This group looks like they want to swing from the hips and let it rip and find themselves another elite quarterback.
No, it certainly does. And if the Rams are any notion out here for the rest of the NFL, it's okay to trade draft picks away for really good quarterbacks like Matthew Stafford, because you can win a championship. Now, the one thing the Buccaneers had even before is they get Tom Brady. They didn't have to trade for him. But if you ask Bruce Arians right now, hey, if we make a trade for 2 first-round draft picks and maybe more capital to get Deshaun Watson, he's making that move yesterday.
Yeah, send those picks down the line, man. I won't be here by the time those chickens come home to roost.
Exactly.
Anyway,
Let's go
win a Super Bowl. Now, also, swing from the hips or is it swing from the knees? You play baseball. Where do you swing from, Donnie, if you really want to hit a home run?
What did I say, though? What did I say?
I said swing from the hip. And now I'm questioning myself.
I said would have been right regardless. That's what I was trying to cover myself. So, yeah, you're wrong. Whatever way you said it was absolutely wrong. So, that's the way we'll play it.
Didn't say anything.
No, I
didn't. Listen up next.
It's your life.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Last segment of the day for the early line. Rated on Sports Grid, Sirius XM Channel 159. Donnie Wrightside and Kevin Wall setting the table from 7 to 9 before handing it over to Ben Stevens and the morning after. Now, it is after the Super Bowl, but my goodness here, the ratings bonanza of the Super Bowl. It's why we love football, so you need to listen up. Unbelievable, the NFL does it again. If you add together streaming, close to 112 million people tuned into the Super Bowl in Los Angeles. Now, I have to say, I think the reason for the ratings bump was the grid was live from Radio Row in Los Angeles all week long. Has to be the common denominator, right? Probably so. But if you look at the divisional rounds, they were up. The championship rounds of both the AFC and NFC, they were both up. And the Super Bowl, sensational. Look, it's a big stage. You had a great halftime show. People ready to get tuned in. But also doesn't hurt when the game's competitiveness is still in the balance late in the game as it was under 2 minutes. The NFL is sensational here. And ratings up across the board this year is no surprise. Look at the games that we had throughout the divisional round and the championship round. They were sensational. But it just goes to show you how big the NFL is. And even this week on Sports Grid here with the early line, both myself and Kevin, so many topics still to hit. Usually when the season ends, you crown the champion and you look forward to baseball season or college basketball season or the NBA, which we cover all of those. But it's still so much fun to talk NFL action day in and day out. Quarterbacks on the move. The draft is coming up. Free agency. OTAs, summer camp, and then there we're going to be next September on a Thursday night while we're watching the Los Angeles Rams get their rings and who they're going to play on opening night of the NFL season. It moves fast, but it is always exciting. The cycle of information coming out 24/7, 365 always has our attention, particularly here at the Grid. We've always going to have you covered here on NFL action. But you know who's got covered next year? Ben Stevens and the Morning After over the next 3 hours right here on SiriusXM channel 159. Stay tuned.
The only place to